Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, January 15th, 2019. An explosion and gunfire rock an upscale hotel in Nairobi today.
I had a loud explosion, but we didn't know what was happening. And all of a sudden, we saw police cars heading towards Riverside, which is around the area where Nairobi University is.
And one activist in South Sudan warns if the parties don't stick to the timeline of the revitalized peace deal, the whole thing could fall apart.
There are key provisions of the agreement that if they are not implemented, the entire agreement will face the risk of collapse. And so it is important that the people of South Sudan have signed this agreement. They should be able to also consider supporting the process.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Kenyan Police Chief Joseph Boynet says authorities suspect today's attack on a hotel complex in Nairobi was the work of terrorists. Security and emergency services responded quickly to the sound of at least one explosion and gunfire at the upscale Dusit D2 Hotel about 3:30 local time this afternoon. My colleague John Tanza was about 5 kilometers away when the explosion occurred.
I had a loud explosion, but we didn't know what was happening. And all of a sudden, we saw police cars heading towards Riverside, which is around the area where Nairobi University is. The medical school is around there. The Australian embassy is also close there. So I saw a lot of police cars heading there. And then we started seeing bits and pieces of information on Facebook and Twitter that there was an attack in Nairobi. When I came to the apartment, immediately I switched to the national broadcaster here, that is the Kenya Broadcasting Corporation, and they have been showing live pictures from the venue of the attack.
We were following on a live AP feed, a video feed, and it seemed like there was sustained gunfire for quite a while.
What we were being told by the national broadcaster is that these guys came into a car, and then one car blew off next to the main entrance. And some of them were inside the hotel, so they started exchanging gunfire in the hotel there. But we don't know who they were shooting because the security forces were not inside the hotel. The Kenyan government has not given out the casualty figures as we speak of now. They are still evacuating people from the building, and the situation is just not clear for now. There are no gunshots. We're not hearing gunshots right now.
Have you heard any group or individual claim responsibility? And if so, who is it?
Not at the moment. There is no official statement out. No group has claimed responsibility, although there are rumors that the Al Jazeera TV has put a tweet out that they spoke to the militant Al-Shabaab, but it's not clear. This is not what the Kenyan media is saying here. The Kenyan media still does not know what is going on, and they're still waiting for an official statement from the government on what has happened.
Although there is no official statement on casualties, have you heard anybody talking about people that may have died?
No, not heard it. I've been following up on the official broadcaster, the Kenya Broadcasting Corporation. They're showing live pictures from there. People are being evacuated, but we don't know. They have not said how many people have died or how many people were killed in the gunfire.
Does it look and sound, from your vantage point, that things are under control now?
Yeah, I must say from the pictures I'm seeing here on the live feed from KBC, I must say the Kenyan security have done a tremendous job getting into the building and evacuating people who were trapped there. That could have also lessened the risk people were involved in, but I have some pictures of people being evacuated from the building, terrified, people are crying, some are traumatized. But, you know, it's a situation where you're caught up in a gunfire, you get into a situation like that. There's a helicopter hovering on top of the vicinity, and security forces are still inside, mopping the area to see if there are remnants of the attackers inside.
Some people are speculating that, you know, in order for them to get as far into the hotel as they did, this had to be planned for some time, and they had to have some kind of inside contact. Have you heard anything like that?
I've not heard about inside contact, but what happened is when the hotel was attacked, people were not able to get in there. It's only people who have firearms cannot try find their ways to get into the place. But they came, the police came, security officers came, cordoned the place. And even the area where the hotel is, they cordoned it, shut down the road, and they were busy, you know, evacuating people from the building. Police officers and, you know, plainclothes officers are busy trying to evacuate people from the building.
And what's going on right now?
Right now, all what is happening is people are being evacuated from the building, and the police have cordoned the area. There's a helicopter flying on top of the building, and there are journalists around there, but journalists have been pushed out from the hotel. They are standing outside, and it's not even clear. They don't know what is happening inside there because they have been told to go out from the area. But one interesting thing that happened when the operation was going on, the evacuation process was going on, there was a car that was just parked by the roadside, and it had an explosion inside it. And so I could see journalists being told to duck down. They ducked down, and then we had an explosion from that car. But bomb experts have been brought. I can see sniffer dogs from the screen that is streaming live pictures from there. So there's more happening on the ground, and the Kenyan government seemed to be in control because you could see helicopters hovering over the building, troops coming in, special forces are on the ground. So they are still evacuating people from the area.
Describe, if you would, the hotel itself and that complex to outsiders who don't know what that area looks like.
Well, the area is on Riverside Drive in Westland. Westland is an upscale part of Nairobi where expatriates and, you know, rich Kenyans live. So this hotel is housed within a residential area, and there's a restaurant there called Secret Garden, which is frequented by, you know, expatriates and people who have, you know, the buying capital to eat good food in the area. But it's a posh area next to Nairobi University hostels for medical school.
And just to reiterate, you don't even know if anyone was killed, right?
No, I don't know. I couldn't say that.
That is South Sudan in Focus managing editor and host John Tanza speaking with me about an hour and a half ago from Nairobi. There are no immediate reports of South Sudanese who were staying at the hotel, but we are monitoring developments and will keep you posted on that front. The former president of the Somali Olympic Committee, Durant Farah, was in that hotel compound when the attack happened. He was with a Somali delegation meeting with an aid agency. He spoke with Haroon Maruf of the VOA Somali Service and has this description of the attack.
Hello. Yes, Haroon.
Describe to me exactly what happened. What you saw?
Thank you very much. I think what we thought, we went through a checkpoint in hotel calling Dusset D2 in Nairobi. We had a meeting with an organization who was actually based next to the hotel. And by the time we backed the place and we wanted to enter the office, we wanted to go, a lot of explosion happened on the gate.
What happened next?
Next, there was a shooting, exchange of fire, a lot of fire. And we've seen people rushing and running around. Very badly. People are running in every direction.
So there was shooting, and then what did you do next?
And when before we entered the offices, we looked outside, and we've seen people running from every direction.
And then
we came down and we ran with the people, and actually there was an alleyway behind the building, and we went through that one, that building.
So
and after about nearly 500 yards, there was a main road. We crossed the main road, and we were still hearing the gunshots.
So where did the explosion take place?
The explosion took place at the gate of the interior of the hotel and the compound. The hotel is in a compound. It's in a big compound.
Was it a car
explosion? It was a hotel and also offices.
Was it a car explosion or suicide bombers?
We believe that it was a car explosion. Although we were not there at the time, but the signs, it was an explosion, and then I think some militias with guns came in.
Did you see anybody? Did you see anyone injured or killed?
Yeah, we've seen many people injured who've been taken out from the building, and I think what we're hearing, they are still in the compound. The attackers are still in the compound.
So describe to me the atmosphere, the situation at the time of the explosion.
The atmosphere, it was a very scary one. Actually, you can understand people who came from normal for daily life to their offices and their place of work. And these sort of things happen. An explosion, a huge explosion, which is actually very frightening. And also, you see people with guns and shooting from every direction. So the people have to run away for their lives. Wherever they see, they feel it, they can run to.
So
luckily, we were one of those people who actually, we were part of those people who came out safe. And we are hopefully, all our prayers are with those who are inside, and hopefully we hope they will come out safely.
What time did the explosion occur?
It was exactly 3:30 p.m. in East African time.
That was Duran Farah, former president of the Somali Olympic Committee. He was speaking a few hours ago with my colleague Haroon Maruf in Nairobi. Some civil society activists say they worry failure by South Sudan's former warring parties to implement the revitalized peace agreement according to the agreed-to timeline will weaken the deal and expose it to the risk of collapse. The head of a local advocacy group says committees have been formed, but they have not done any real work so far. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
It has been 4 months since the pre-transitional committee was formed and tasked to set up the institutions responsible for implementing various protocols of the revitalized agreement. But Rajab Mohandis, executive director at the Juba-based Organization for Responsive Governance, says the parties have yet to do anything practical to move the peace process forward. Mohandis says if the international community continues to fail to push the parties to stick to the implementation timeline, the deal might collapse.
There are key provisions of the agreement that if they are not implemented, the entire agreement will face the risk of collapse. And so it is important that as the people of South Sudan have signed this agreement, they should be able to also consider supporting the process, especially maintaining engagement with these parties to ensure that the parties collaborate and that the agreement is really implemented. Everyone wants to see peace in South Sudan, and so the little steps being taken should be supported to move on towards addressing the violence, the conflict peacefully, and transforming the situation in the country.
Mohandis argues that implementing the peace deal, especially those provisions which do not require donor support, should entirely be steered by the South Sudanese people.
The government and the parties together should invest political goodwill and demonstrate responsibility and leadership. And that in itself will then convince others, the partners and donors, to invest their resources in the implementation of the agreement.
Mohandis says although the parties have ceased hostilities, they have yet to release all political detainees and allow freedom of speech. Jame David Kolok, executive director for the Juba-based Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, says some provisions like the transitional justice and accountability, which include the establishment of a hybrid court, are difficult to implement because some officials fear they might be charged with crimes.
These are fundamental aspects of the agreement that are seen as very important in terms of enhancing reconciliation, very important in terms of averting any future occurrence of similar human rights violations in the country. And it is the only opportunity through which people can be able to get the truth of why certain things have happened to them. Now, these have been very, very challenging.
Kolok says unless the parties commit to implementing such important provisions of the agreement, including establishing the hybrid court, they risk creating an environment similar to the past where people commit atrocities with impunity.
If, again, they repeat history by not achieving the establishment of this legislation and formation of these institutions, the same way it happened in the agreement that has been revitalized, means number of things. South Sudanese will not be able to know the truth of what happened to them.
Kolok says investigating and documenting some of the fundamental evidence related to the cause of the conflict is important to deter future conflicts. He also says unless victims who lost their property are compensated, animosity will increase. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Farmers say if they don't get better roads soon, they'll keep losing money. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you break bad news?
I break bad news looking at the person's mood as at that moment, whether to tell the person or not. And if you are telling the person, how would the person take it at that moment you are telling the person?
I think when you need to talk about something difficult, you just need to come right out and do it. So if it's bad news, I think just go right ahead and let it be known and say what you have to say and just figure out how to get over it.
Break bad news to people in a gradual process, because most of the times bad news come as a form of a shock to people. So you break it in a form of a gradual process by saying it in parables or using illustrations.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Some farmers in Magwi and Iyasi counties of Torit State say the poor road network there ruins their livelihood. They say when they produce surplus food, they are unable to transport it to markets in Torit and Juba on time because of those bad roads. Winnie Serino has the story for VOA from Juba.
Sitting on a bench under an umbrella selling cassava in Juba's customs market, 30-year-old Sabina Auma says she brought cassava from Magwi County to sell in the market but feels she's making very little profit, if any. Auma says she grows cassava, simsim, and peas on her 3-acre farm. Speaking in her native Acholi language, Sabina says revenue officials overtax farmers as they transport their produce to Juba and Torit, leaving them with very little profit for all their work.
We carry food stuff and bring to Juba, but before we take them, we call the owner of the truck. The driver will say the road is bad and will charge us 3,000 South Sudanese pound. If we negotiate to pay 2,500 South Sudanese, he will refuse to transport the food to staff, leaving them there to get spoiled. And we just pay the 3,000 pounds.
Agnes Anik, another small-scale farmer from Magwi County, grows cassava and millet in her village. Anik says she frequently brings her produce to Juba because there is bigger demand for food in the capital. Speaking in her native Acholi language, Anik says farmers have on several occasions actually lost money due to the bad roads.
At times, you call for a truck like today when you have already harvested your cassava, and they will come after 2 days when your cassava has already rotten. The drivers will give you excuse of bad roads. At times, the truck will not come and you will be forced to cut and dry the cassava, giving you loss.
Onek James, a farmer in Ayachi County, says to reach State is a fertile land for growing crops. He says farmers in Torit have the capacity to supply Juba residents with food, but they are challenged by the poor road network. He says fresh fruits and vegetables often go bad on the way to the market.
The worst one is the vegetables, because this area is good in producing vegetables. And you know, vegetables are perishable goods that they don't take long on the road. If you begin transporting those vegetables here, for example, like tomatoes, cabbage, and other things to go to Juba, we may take some days on the road, and by the time we reach the market, this thing already spoiled.
Torit State Governor Tobiolo Alberio acknowledges the road network was destroyed in 2016 when fighting spread to the state.
During the crisis, most of our development partners have pulled away, and they use the money that was supposed to be used for development, they turn it now for emergency relief, for giving relief support to the IDPs. Now that we have achieved this peace, the revitalized peace agreement, our development partners are now returning. And even Torit Magwi Road, by February, they are going to start.
Farmers say they will earn a profit from farming once the government improves the road network, especially the Magwi Torit and the Magwi Juba roads. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Residents of Yei Municipality in Yei River State say a recent decision by county authorities there to approve higher fuel prices from 270 to 290 South Sudanese pounds per liter has led to higher transportation costs and food prices, making life even more difficult after 4 years of deadly conflict. But the mayor of Yei Town says higher fuel prices are only temporary. Daniel Friday Martin has more for VOA from Yei.
Before last week, a liter of petrol or diesel sold for 270 South Sudanese pounds in Yei Town. Now it costs 290 South Sudanese pounds. Yesterday, municipal officials endorsed the increase. Yei Town resident John Lasu says due to the higher fuel prices, he doesn't have enough money to transport a female relative from his village a few kilometers away to Yei Civil Hospital.
The women who are really like 13 women who are supposed to go to the hospital, sometimes ambulance cannot access other areas in rural areas. They are supposed to use motorbike. And in this case, 1 mile is already 100 pounds in which some of the ordinary citizens cannot raise it. And I really ask my government really to listen to our people. Let them make sure they reduce the price so that we are able to access everything.
Hilary Lokonga, a border operator in Yei Town, says border operators recently doubled their charges to meet the increasing cost of fuel.
Things are becoming hard on our side. As I talk now, a liter for fuel is now 290, of which it is really too expensive to us. It makes us to just transfer our burden to those customers of ours, the one that we used to take them from short distance of 50, now we have increased to 100, and everybody even is charging on his own different part.
Lokonga is also urging the government to reverse its decision to endorse the higher fuel prices. Yei Town resident Kenyi Alex says he fears his border business will be negatively affected by the increase in fuel prices because many of his clients now prefer to work for several kilometers rather than pay for border service.
It will really affect my business because I have to also increase the charges. Like a distance of right now, a distance of 50 pounds is already increased to 80 pounds because of the price changes. So to me, it is not good. Today, I have not made any business because the customers, they ran away.
Speaking in Arabic, Agnes Maneno, a resident of Yei's High Peace suburb, says she was surprised to learn the cost of grinding grains at a local mill has increased due to the higher fuel prices.
I went to the market to take my maize grains for grinding, and I was told grinding a kilogram of maize grains now cost 30 South Sudanese pounds from 15 South Sudanese pounds per kilogram in the past. It's too expensive, and as women, we are calling on the government to reduce fuel prices.
Speaking in Arabic, Yei Municipality Mayor Al-Fati Morgan says the government agreed to the supplier's request to temporarily increase the price of fuel because of the rise in the value of the U.S. dollar against the local currency.
We sat together with the fuel suppliers and agreed in the meeting that a liter of petrol or diesel will be at 290 South Sudanese pounds. We also agreed together that once there is a drop in the dollar rate, there will also be a decrease in the price of a liter of fuel. And we said once the exchange rate is high again, we will sit down to adjust accordingly. And I know our government in Juba is working very hard to improve the dollar exchange rate.
Speaking in Arabic, Yei Town resident Gia Florence says it was wrong for the government to increase fuel prices at a time when many people are finding it hard to put food on the table.
An increase in the fuel cost will lead to an automatic rise in the cost of food commodities. This will be hard for those people not working. It also came at a wrong time because people are finding it difficult to make money, and we will be subjected into suffering as ordinary civilians.
The South Sudan government says it plans to build an oil refinery, which it hopes will produce cheap fuel for citizens. Daniel Friday Martin for VOA News in Yei Town.
The neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo's post-election chaos moved to the judicial system today as the Constitutional Court began hearing opposition candidate Martin Fayulu's claim that he was robbed of victory. The 16-nation Southern African Development Community is expected to hold an emergency meeting on Thursday in Addis Ababa to discuss the situation. Several African bodies are calling for a recount, as we hear from VOA's Anita Powell from Pretoria.
This is new territory for the Democratic Republic of Congo. The nation appears poised to see its first ever opposition president take power in a poll that has been widely criticized for irregularities and delays. But first, the man who believes he actually won the poll wants his day in court. On Saturday, opposition coalition leader Martin Fayulu, who was favored by polls to win the December 30th vote, asked the Constitutional Court to order a recount. On Sunday, Fayulu attended church in the capital, Kinshasa, with his family and a bevy of enthusiastic followers. We have faith, and our faith is intact, he says. Undaunted, because the people have decided and the will of the people will be realized. I'm a man of faith. Fayulu's choice of venue was no accident. For many Congolese citizens, the Catholic Church is the sole provider of schooling, healthcare, and basic services. And so, when the church said vote tallies collected by its 40,000 election observers show Fayulu won the election, citizens listened. Then last week, the Electoral Commission announced that opposition leader Felix Tshisekedi had won according to provisional results. That announcement sparked surprise and outrage, and not just from the usual quarters. The Southern African Development Community, SADC, called for a recount of the vote and a government of national unity. Their call was supported late Sunday by another African bloc, the International Conference of the Great Lakes Region. Analyst Stephanie Walters of the Institute for Security Studies says these statements from regional mediators are surprising.
It is a departure from how they've handled other electoral crises in member states. It's also certainly a departure from some of the weaker statements that SADC has made on the DRC. It's really taken a very hands-off approach to this electoral crisis over the last 3 years. So it's a surprise. In terms of how effective it can be, I think we have some doubts.
That's because, she says, the body in charge of declaring a recount, the Constitutional Court, is loyal to longtime President Joseph Kabila. In the election, Kabila backed his former Interior Minister, Emmanuel Shadary. But Shadary finished third in the voting, and analysts say that he was so obviously unpopular that it would have provoked serious outrage had the Electoral Commission anointed him the winner. Although Kabila is stepping down, analysts think he aims to play a dominant role behind the scenes when, or if, Tshisekedi takes office. The Constitutional Court has 10 days from Fayulu's filing to rule. Meanwhile, the Electoral Commission also announced that Kabila's ruling Common Front for Congo, FCC party, led the parliamentary vote. That means the president-elect, who heads the Union for Democracy and Social Progress, UDPS, party, may have some political struggles ahead, says analyst Claude Kabemba, director of Southern Africa Resource Watch.
If there is marriage between the FCC and UDPS, not to last for very long, it's not a marriage by conviction, and that's a problem, and they will have serious tension.
But before any of that can happen, the court needs to decide: recount the vote, or risk legitimacy by letting the results stand. Anita Powell, VOA News, Pretoria.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Ana Taban, which means We Are Tired of War, by a group of South Sudanese musicians.
نجري لمتين وليوين ندي يالنا وندي أرواحنا وندي دمنا فضل شنو تاني أنا تعبان
أنا ما شابان لكن أنا بس تعبان أنا ما فرحان لكن أنا بس فتران أنا ما سكران لكن أنا بس كسران أنا ما كسران لكن أنا بس تعبان
Salama through the kuma kumya vijunukta Silai kun hajam wazini maishufya Vinia bonjoz yaba habuba Hajad mabemba vijunukta Gabriya jua unzuriya jua Kerehiya jua gaba kapi jua Fasad jua Nyagama hajata nan jua
We've been listening to South Sudanese musicians with the song Ana Taban. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and on behalf of engineer Wagner Roberts and director Nadia Taha, thanks for joining us. We're glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.
I'm feeling so tired. Ana Taban.
Ana Taban means jere jere.